Hello and welcome to Music Works, a podcast by Polyphony Arts. We're talking about the future of the classical music industry with some great guests. Thank you for joining us. Hello and welcome to Music Works, a podcast by Polyphony Arts. I'm Katie Beardsworth and today I'm joined by Tom Appleton, the co-founder of the Come and Sing Company.
Hi, Tom. Hi, how are you?
I'm fine, thank you. How are you?
Nice to see you.
Nice to see you. Thanks so much for joining us. Do you want to tell us a bit about what the Come and Sing Company does?
Yeah, we specialize in very nearly illegal activity. We bring people together in song. How exciting is this to live with this dangerous activity that my business deals with? In normal times, we bring up to, well, there's no limit on the top number, hundreds, thousands of people together from schools, from businesses, in festivals, in heritage organizations, wherever, to sing together. And as alluded to, and I don't know if anyone's seen the news, there's been this thing going on called a pandemic. And two things that are really to avoid are people getting too close to each other and then kind of communicating with each other and aerosoling all over each other. Yeah, we've had a fun 6 months or so, let's be honest, flirting with the law.
Well, I mean, the specifics of this particular pandemic have not been kind to your area of work, have they really?
No, I mean, let's be honest, not too many people have flourished recently, yeah. But no, and especially in the arts, we've been looking around for all the support that we can get, and we've been adapting as much as we possibly can. I think our bread and butter work tends to be in education. We do a lot of work in schools, and we are, in fact, on April the 6th, we became the lead practitioners for Norfolk Music Education Hub's vocal strategy. So we were all set for this year to be quite a big year in terms of delivering loads of stuff across Norfolk. We also are partners with Lincolnshire Music Hub, and we do work with Cambridgeshire and lots of national portfolio organisations such as Snake Maltings and the Norwich Theatre Royal. And yeah, I mean, we've been running for about 3 years or so. To get to that level, we were really pleased with ourselves. To be honest, we were going some. And
absolutely.
I suppose one of our highlights had been to take 700 kids from Norfolk with a production that started at the Theatre Royal in Norwich of A Kind of Magic Flute, which is a Cuban twist on the Magic Flute. And it won the award to go and be the masked ensemble at the Music for Youth Proms at the Royal Albert Hall in November just gone. And so we took 700 kids down to perform at the Royal Albert Hall in front of a packed auditorium. And I mean, whatever happens from here on in, that night will remain a career highlight. That's the sort of trajectory that we were on was really... reveling in music education and enjoying bringing kids from across the county all together to make something bigger than they could do in their own school setting, I suppose. So yeah, we're adapting. Maybe we want to chat about what we're doing now.
Yeah, sure. So I mean, obviously a really impressive trajectory and an enormous shame to have it curtailed by the pandemic. But what are you doing now? Because you've certainly not been idle, have you?
We've not been idle. I mean, like everybody, constantly changing guidelines, constantly changing thoughts and dangers and all the rest of it. It's been really difficult to plan some things. We, over the, I guess from sort of March through to July, we were frankly just scrabbling around for any Arts Council grants and government support that we could get our hands on, just to try and kind of get a bit of a nest egg in the bank and see how long we could last it out. Nobody knew how long it was going to go on for at that point, and it was just kind of help. So we spent 3 months just turning into an aid agency, basically, and trying to aid ourselves and finding what we could. August time, we started running some summer school youth choir stuff for Norfolk Music Hub, and kids once a week would join us on Zoom, and we would do both a primary session and a secondary session with children able to log in from home and just sing along with us, looking at some cool repertoire that just was designed to I suppose give the parents a bit of respite over the summer holidays, and get these kids enjoying music making. And then school term kind of kicked in, and we deliberately put a bit of a pause on just to go, what the regulations changed from memory on about August the 28th, and schools then had 5 days or a long weekend to get their heads around a lot of this stuff and go, right, this is what we're, how we're going to make our systems work. And so we thought, let's just give everybody a break. And we knew that schools were going to be under a lot of pressure all over the place, and in particular with feeling that they'd have to get kids catching up on various things, and that probably singing some stuff was quite low down on their list of priorities. And we sort of thought, actually, you know what, we're going to just respect that. We're not going to turn up on September the 5th with a project, come and join in this, because they've got other things to worry about, and fair enough. We've started to launch a few projects for largely to start after half term. But I have to say, and we'll talk about those in a minute, but what is actually really needed, I think, is just communication to schools at the moment to say singing is considered okay now. There's been scientific research, and the limits are still there. You can't do cross bubble stuff, but you singing in school is an option, and you need to do it because of X, Y, and Z. I think what we're finding is lots of schools, the SLTs, the senior leadership teams, are just going, can we just put that over there for a minute? Let's not worry about it. Let's focus on this. And actually, there just is a bit of messaging that needs to get out to schools now from music hubs and anybody with a platform, just to say, hey, did you know that singing actually is okay? Just as an example, my daughter, who was six, on the 8th of September, it wasn't allowed for her classmates to sing happy birthday to her. She kind of came home crying, going, I hate this pandemic. I wanted them to sing happy birthday. And that's a rule that's continuing to today. It's the 13th of October at the date of recording here. They're still not singing happy birthday in their class, even though it's allowed. Just one.
Really sad.
But there's
tragic things that are happening on a big scale in this pandemic, but it's the micro tragedies.
I know, really, the micro, are, yeah. Yeah. Well, when you're six, that matters, doesn't it? So I suppose it matters at any age. I should think, everybody likes a rendition of Happy Birthday. But, so I think there's just some defrosting that needs to take place, and anybody who can just to show stuff happening is really good, because I think it inspires others to say, maybe we could be doing something.
Yeah, I think you're right. I mean, obviously, as a singer and someone who works in music, I was following the research about singing and wind and brass instruments really closely. Mm. And as soon as it was, concluded that these things weren't dangerous as they were thought to be, that became something that I knew, but not everybody knows that. Absolutely important that because obviously I spoke about this with a horn player who came on this podcast a few weeks ago, and he said it's just a real shame. Obviously everyone wants to be safe and nobody wants to do anything that isn't safe, but when something gets kind of branded as being unsafe that isn't, it takes quite a long time to change that.
It's really difficult.
And to change the level of obviously things that people are concerned about.
And also, because you and I,
we'll spread the word. Yeah.
Let's hope. But I mean, you and I are in this world. I think if you watched, I don't want to sort of date this recording, but last night, just to put in everybody's mind where we're currently sat today, last night was on the news the distribution of a big chunk of the £1.57 billion arts package, 225 odd million of it going to places across the country, organisations across the country. And I think as the layperson, you probably look at that and go, oh, good. This is good. And all of those organisations are on the news going, this is great. We've been given X tens, hundreds of thousands of pounds. This will pay people's wages going forwards. You can't knock that. But I think that conversation, two things have been missed out. That's not saved all these organizations for the future. They're still going to be making cuts. There's still going to be job cuts within those buildings. So I know of an organization, I won't name them, that are looking to lose they would be losing £1.5 million this year. And yesterday got just under £1 million towards those costs, which is great, but there's still £500,000 shortfall, which is going to be people's jobs and productions and whatever. So point one is that those people in those jobs, those organizations are not actually saved as they were. And secondly, for people like me, frankly, freelancers that rely on these organizations for freelance work, I've said earlier that I'm working in festivals, I'm working in concert halls, I'm working in schools, I work across the whole platform. It's really risky, and the government support for freelancers is at the moment, time of writing, 20% of our profits going forwards. And you say, we'll talk about how that 20% is actually really generous in some ways, because I'm fortunate enough to have some work coming up in the next few months, and it will make a big difference. But there are plenty of other friends of mine who, through no fault of their own, are just not able to survive on that figure for the next few months.
Absolutely. The problem with I have so many things I want to say about what you just said, but the first one is to do with these organisations that have received the money, which is brilliant, like you say, no one's complaining about that. But the problem is that they've, in general, I find that the organisation, music organisations and arts organisations, quite often are asked to operate on such a basis of scarcity anyway, that, you know, yeah, £500,000 of loss is a lot to any company probably, or certainly most companies. But even if it was £10,000, some companies would still really, really struggle with that level of that. That might be half a performance budget gone, you know, that kind of thing. So it's like these are not organizations where there is sort of spare money and reserves floating about, you know, just waiting for pandemics to come along and give them an opportunity to be used. So it really is quite serious. And on the subject of freelancers, I mean, there was some press in the week in the Daily Mail actually about musicians that have retrained temporarily or permanently, and a violinist that I know was posting this week about setting up an Etsy shop, and it's like you say, these aren't people that don't have any work necessarily. Some people don't, but even with a bit of work, you still can't actually survive on those kinds of money. So it's sort of like, what do I do? Do I abandon it altogether? Do I find a job that means that I can still work when it comes up? I mean, what jobs are they? The ones that are so flexible that they can work around a freelance? Yeah.
Well, again,
that's occasional, you know.
Yeah, sure. And let's move on to more positive things. But when you've got mixed messaging from the government as well, such as we're 24 hours after Fatima Gate, which I think will probably last long in the arts memories. Yes. I mean, what are we up against here? It's really hard. You've got Oliver Dowden responding to advertising from a government partner and saying, actually, look, musicians, you need to hang on in there as long as you possibly can. You're hearing that from him, and you're kind of like, okay, well, I'm going to try it. And we as musicians, it's not the same as and artists, dancers, and whoever. To leave that, I was just having a discussion with my wife this morning. I said, can we just have this discussion? Like, what is it that I would do if I wasn't doing this? I'm very lucky that I'm probably going to be clinging on, I hope, to being a musician for the rest of my life. That's my plan. But what my transferable skills, you know, what is it that I would do? And I took the government's test where you can go and put in your personality traits and it tells you what you... I'm not a boxer, which I think a lot of people came up as their thing.
Boxing industry would be, flourishing.
Clearly, I think that's just because there's a lot of aggression being thrown around. They're kind of thinking, you know, I've looked at your Twitter account and I can see that you're a feisty one. But no, one of the things that that actually did come up for me that I could agree with, if you like, was being a business development manager. And I could see that because clearly in my own business, I've raised it from nothing and we've kind of got to, I can see that that is a skill that I've got. The problem I've got with that is that I've then got to go probably and work for somebody else, which is, I don't want to do that because I'm a pain in the ass to work for or with, or, and yeah, don't work with me. And equally, you then have to do it probably at like 9 to 5 that is a square peg in a round hole doing that type of work. And I've tried it before, having a PAYE job on regular hours, and it doesn't work for anyone because I'm a free spirited git and I'm a very successful one, but it's just not who I am.
It's so not for you. Yeah.
No, so I would rather, whatever, sit here and complain.
Yeah. Yeah. I think, certainly. It's funny one, isn't it? I often think, when I used to work for the university, whenever we did recruitment, I worked for a university music department, and I always loved recruiting for the jobs that had something about music or the art. There was drama as well and film and an artsy kind of job, because those people, those candidates, were always, I was thinking to myself, is this a controversial thing to say? But I'm going to say it anyway. Those candidates were always better at all of the things, not just the artsy things, but all of the things. They had really, really good analytical skills. And, I can see musicians would be good at business development because they are businesses and have had to develop their own businesses and are used to dealing with very complex and creative ideas.
And working in a team, but also being a soloist, you do have a massive set of skills that, having just said I'm a nightmare to work with in a team, I'm not in a, it's fine. But I think that but it is what it is. I'm really fortunate that I've got fingers in lots of different pies, and I know that that's a good thing and a bad thing, but the one thing that I think has managed to keep me going is my education work, because a lot of, we would do kind of corporate team building days and things like that, that's getting companies to sing together, getting the CEO and the groundsman and the receptionist and the HR manager all singing, and it was great, but of course that's just impossible nowadays. And I'm really lucky that I found myself, actually one of the major parts of my business was state funded, and that's the state education sector. So I recognize how lucky I am that I've got that going on. A lot of my friends when I used to sing professionally with the Monteverdi Choir would be spending most of their time, or certainly a large proportion of it, touring around Europe with different orchestras and different choirs. Some of these people are just exceptional Baroque oboe players. That's what they are, the world's best second oboist on a Baroque oboe, and are in demand all over the place to go and do these things. And of course, with travel restrictions and Brexit and the arts industry and the downturn and all the rest of it, these guys have never before really needed to be in a school setting or doing one-to-one teaching or anything like that. And suddenly you can see these people who are masters of their craft, just having the rug pulled out from them. Mm. And it's very sad to see.
It is. I kind of want to move away from this topic, but I just have to say one more thing, because sure. I could actually talk about this forever, but perhaps, hopefully by the time this is released, things will be looking better, I don't know. Mm. But I just think as well that the thing that always gets lost in these conversations, however kind of lighthearted or not they are, about people reskilling or retraining or using their skills elsewhere and so on and so forth, is just how it feels to be somebody who is incredibly skilled and at the top of their game at being whatever that is, the second Baroque oboist in the world or whatever, and to then go from that to being like, oh well, if you just retrain you can be this, and it's like, well actually no, because I did train. happened. And it is really this is something that I've sort of experienced a bit when one of the reasons why I started my business was because I didn't really feel like my job had changed. I didn't feel like my skills were being used properly anymore. And I just thought, it had sort of morphed into something that wasn't really what I wanted. And actually, it took, like, that was a bit more gradual. This is quite sudden. But it kind of led to really needing to kind of rebuild those skills and rethink about what things I really like. And I think that's one of the things about being freelance in particular and kind of managing your own creative career, is that you can choose things that you can't choose in a 9-to-5, like not working in certain ways. And, you know, all of these things are basically to do with personal choice and differences and personalities and like art and sort of creativity. And those are things that people don't benefit if those things are taken away from.
Yeah, just a final thought from me then is actually there's been a lot of support for heritage organisations as well recently, and lots of cathedrals and lots of whatever else have been given some very welcome dosh. And I don't see really, other than about 600 years of history, much difference between Salisbury Cathedral and an orchestral player in the pit at Cats in London. That these are both things that we should cherish and hold close to our hearts. And just the example that I'd give is, of course, at the final of Britain's Got Talent just this weekend, where we got the casts of Phantom and Mary Poppins and Les Mis on stage, and Cameron McIntosh with a war cry. This is something that we as a nation do cherish and do enjoy. And one of the things that's happened in lockdown was this opening up of culture. And you'd see stuff on Disney Plus. We watched Hamilton about 38 times when it got released, because we'd never seen it, and we hadn't got the chance to get into London with young kids and go and watch it. And tickets were a nightmare to get hold of anyway. And suddenly you're like, whoa, look how cool this is, and the brilliant, you know, actors and whatever else that are involved with it, and One Man, Two Governors, and War Horse, and whatever that everybody's kind of seen over these last few months. And then to see it again at the final of Britain's Got Talent and go, nobody's been to a theatre to see something like this in 6-8 months. And my wife and I, there's a thing on, I live in Bury St Edmunds in Suffolk, and we've got a venue, an arts venue here. And at the moment, they've got a socially distanced exhibition, which is it's to scale, and it's probably a 40-foot globe, so it's the Earth, hanging up above you, and you can kind of walk around and look. It's a dark room with the globe kind of above your head, and it's all there. And it just to be able to experience some culture in person was just a mind-blowing experience. And I couldn't give two hoots what it is now. I'll go and listen to some Mongolian throat poetry. I would be enthralled by it, like, just to sit there and listen to somebody do something like that. That's how starved we are. That's how it needs to nourish us.
It does, absolutely. Not to say anything bad about Mongolian throat poetry.
I'm a big fan.
So let's talk about what the Come and Sing Company is doing then, because I've actually been, I mean, we've just talked about this just before we started this call, and I'm particularly encouraged to hear that there is so much and the work with children, who I really feel as a parent my child is being somewhat starved of many things. My company, really. So yes, do tell us about them.
Yeah, well, hugely. And again, coming at it from a freelance musician point of view, we have I certainly in the last patch of time have been fighting. I've been scrambling. I've been ducking and diving to try and keep my business afloat, keep my head above water and my head in some kind of sanity. As soon as we kind of started to think about what work we might be doing, I was actually really disappointed. I was like, this is just, I'm not going to get the thrill of live performance. I'm not going to get the joy of the rehearsal period, the kind of live rehearsing stuff. It's all going to be a nightmare. And lost heart, really, sitting there pressing play on some YouTube videos, hoping that everyone was singing along at home, has its limited appeal. But then actually, as you go forwards, you begin to realize that these kids a year, let's say, if not longer, that it'll be since from start to finish of lockdowns of various flavors. A year is a long time in the life of a 6, 8, 10, 11-year-old child. And if they haven't been able to sing in assembly or sing in their class or go to a pantomime or experience culture, then we are in real danger of causing lasting damage to not just the kids, but frankly, the kind of audience, the future enjoyers and participants in this great world of the arts that we love. So actually, do you know what? My problems are nothing. I have a massive responsibility now to try and get kids doing stuff and keeping them hooked and coming up with projects that will engage them and that they will go, that's really cool. I want to do a career in that, or I want to explore more about this, that, or the other that you and I and many of the followers of this podcast will have been brought up in our youth being inspired by something. It's so important that we continue to provide those opportunities for the next generation coming through. So I guess, what does that look like? It's really difficult on the ground at the moment. Schools are suffering from the mixed messaging that many of us are. There are many schools still, we're just before half term in October. There are many schools who haven't sung a note in school since the start of, since middle of March. There will be children who have not sung really at all in that period of time. And that's, even though it's now perfectly legal and it's it can be done safely, there's two things. There's senior leadership team and others looking at this and going, it's just too much of a headache. You need the school hall for a certain period of time. We've got to get ventilation in there. We can only have this many kids. Do you know what? We're just going to shelve that and make sure that the dinner ladies can clean up properly, so we've got the Dettol wipes out for longer. You know, there are huge pressures on schools to be able to operate. So I get it. I'm not going to criticize a single school that's gone, we're just not going to do singing yet. We're going to let everything settle down and see where we get to. So we're up against that. We're also up against restrictions that mixing of bubbles is very, very difficult, if not impossible. So there's two sets of guidelines. There's what's called in-school setting, which is, as you might imagine, between the hours of, say, 8:50 and 12, and then 12:45 through to 3 o'clock, the times when they're kind of traditionally in classrooms learning stuff. That singing can be done by whole classes now, which is great. But what can't happen is mixing of bubbles and what's called out-of-school settings. So this is before school choir, this is lunchtime choir, this is after-school choir. That's very difficult to get around the restrictions there of mixing different bubbles from different year groups to achieve that. So you're sort of limited in what you can offer these guys, but there's also other options. So you can provide twilight sessions where you say, right, you're going home at 3 o'clock, we can you log in again at 4:30 once you've got home, and we're going to do some online stuff, because at home you can sing as loud as you like and really go for it and let off some steam, whereas in school it's much more difficult. Or you're making sure that your projects have a really good educational message and value, or health and well-being value to them, so that they can be done in classrooms quite easily, and schools will go, okay, yeah, look, this is going to tick lots of our boxes, and let's do that. So I guess I should probably, along that line, tell you about one of our projects that we're looking at doing next year. We're already planning for January through to March, the sort of spring term of next year. We've got a partnership going with Cambridgeshire Music Education Hub and Norfolk Music Education Hub, where we're going to be delivering all of the arts-based curriculum for the whole of Key Stage 1 across those two counties. And so Key Stage 1 kids and their families and their teachers are going to be taken on a journey to the Ugly Bug Ball And we're going to encourage kids to look at three major things that have been important to us over the last period of time. Obviously, the arts, sort of music and crafting and all of the kind of stuff that's kept us sane in the last few months. The outside world, you'll remember the heaviest parts of lockdown, we were allowed 30 minutes of exercise each. That was, for many people, the very highlight of their day, being able to be outside, and we would rush to the nearest park or the nearest graveyard or the nearest wherever to just see a blade of grass. And health and well-being. So the natural world, health and well-being, and the arts is this big project. And we're getting kids to sing outdoors, and depends where we are as a country, but we'd like them to sing in their gardens or in the park or in their school playing fields. And we're coming up with 11 weeks of activities where they're learning a song each week, they're doing some arts and crafts work, and they're doing some kind of creative stuff through all this, and some poetry and what have you. So that by the end of the term, there's going to be thousands of concerts across Cambridgeshire and Norfolk, where they're going to sing the 11 songs in their garden with props that they've made sort of hanging from the trees and what have you. So it's kind of cool to just think, let's get, because we can do that for the biggest audience that we like. We can go national with that now. Once you've created the resources, that can just go. And so in a funny way, it's, you're really limited, but equally you can expand brilliantly. If you've got a product that is really good, and I don't know, therefore, if I don't know, Cumbria Music Hub wants to buy into that, or Glasgow or wherever, I don't have to go to those places to deliver that. I can literally go, here it is. And you know, so there's a lot of work now, but equally it there is a massive audience that would otherwise be much more difficult for us to get hold of in the past.
I mean, that just sounds like such a fantastic project and such a good reinvention of so the Ugly Bug Ball was before a project that was done in school groups or in music hub groups all together. And, you know, I just think, you know, more of an intensive basis. And I think that this is a reinvention of it that really, really works. An example of a way a project can be reimagined in a way that isn't secondary to how it was before.
Sometimes it's not like needing to reinvent the wheel. It's just what actually can you do, and how do you do it in this world? You don't necessarily need to completely jump ship and think, right, we need to do brand new stuff. Also, just do what you do really well in a different way.
Yeah, and it's nice to be forced to think outside the box, I think. Mm. As much as the reasons for it are as I keep saying on this podcast, really upsetting and tragic and of course so much upset, but I also, you know, it is important to focus on the positives that come from it, and that is I think the inventiveness of arts projects in general that's coming out at the moment, and the reach of them, as you pointed out. We are no longer bound by location, we're bound by other things. You know, it's like I organise a regional music festival or a city-based music festival in Hull, a chamber music series, and in theory, the online version of that could be viewed by anyone in the world, anywhere. And that is not something that's possible from, you know, deepest Hull, usually.
You would just never have done it, really, in the past, would you? You would have been like, this is not our target audience. Well, now it is your target audience, because you haven't got a real one. So... difficult to get one. So you put all your eggs into that basket. And then we'll see what comes out in 18 months' time. You'll probably be delivering a hybrid of the two things, and you'll be very happy about it.
Yeah, and I really hope so. I mean, to use that example, I love other things about that. I can, other people within Hull who wouldn't have come to the concerts can come to the concerts online. People who don't have money for transport, or who don't have childcare, or, you know, would just prefer not to, would prefer to watch some cultural stuff whilst eating a pizza and drinking a bottle of wine, as actually many of us would.
I did once do a Christmas gig where in a really lovely church, and we invited one of the local schools to come and perform in it. And a family did turn up at the back with a McDonald's takeaway meal to sit there and watch the whole kind of caboodle. And I thought, you know what, great, let's have it. And you come. So, yeah, it's fine.
Well, that's one solution to the ever ongoing problem of when do you eat around a standard classical concert, which is because literally when do you? So yeah. During.
That's the thing. Purcell had it right with his operas and whatever else. That back in the day, they're eating throughout and they're having big intervals. And you know, Glyndebourne does this. I think we need to embrace this much more than it needs to get down to all levels of the creative arts. Eating and art is fun.
Yeah, exactly. We all like to eat and watch.
There's a project in there somewhere. I'm going to make a project out of this somehow. There'll be singing and food.
Called exactly that, though. Eating and Art is Fun. That is the title.
Yeah. Well, I'll write it down.
Yeah. Great. Lovely. Great. We've probably got a few more minutes if you want to tell us about your panto. So I think it's going to be a really sad lack of the classic traditional Christmas panto this Christmas.
Yeah, it's again one of the things that we looked at straight away was what is Christmas music making going to look like and what are kids going to be missing, and we obviously the pantomime is a big family tradition that lots of people want to get involved with each year, and we started looking around for partners and what have you, The Sheringham Little Theatre, which is, as its name suggests, a very regional, almost black box theatre, do a panto every year. And they may only, from memory, they get kind of 80 people in the audience. You know, it's not a particularly big space. My apologies if they're watching and I've got these numbers entirely wrong, but it's not a Royal Opera House at all. And they're quite used to doing quite small scale pantomimes just purely for budgetary reasons in real life, and they were looking and going, look, we really like to do this, and got in touch with the Music Hub in Norfolk and said, is there any way we can kind of work together, what are you thinking about this? And everybody just got in a meeting and went, oh my goodness, this is going to be hilariously good fun, and the nation needs a laugh. And the director muttered the immortal words that my business partner is called Ellie, and he said, Tom and Ellie, perhaps would you mind being two halves of a socially distanced panto horse? And we are all over that. If ever you needed two halves of a socially distanced panto horse, it's me and Ellie. So this will be going on. Linking it to ArtsMark, award so that schools can be doing that alongside it. We're doing a big thing about the sort of history of pantomime and how it's developed over the years, and it's the story is Rapunzel, the lockdown panto, and so Rapunzel is up in her tower with her hair growing and is all isolated, and it's very a la mode. And we look forward to that going forwards. We put out some feelers to schools, and within 24 hours of tickets and sort of buy-in, if you like, going out to schools, we had 4,000 children from primary schools across Norfolk signed up and wanted to take part. So they'll be learning the songs at home, in school, in their classes, and dance moves and all the rest of it, and they'll be learning about the history of panto and joining us for a live stream on the 16th of December. And the producers kind of looked at this and went, hey, this is pretty cool. They had 4,000 kids sign up. Let's go a bit bigger. And so music hubs from across the country are now getting in touch saying, can we buy into this? Can we be involved in it? So we find ourselves in this kind of national panto thing going on to schools. So completely by chance, but very excitingly, it's another example of people craving this stuff and the opportunities available now in this new world. But if you can get it good and you can get it what people want, they'll go for it.
It's just so amazing to hear about a project that involves so many people when everything is all about distance. It is just really fantastic to hear about that. I'm so glad that that's happening.
It's fabulous. The cast, there's four actors and there's going to be four people in the pit. So, you know, it's not going to be paying everybody's mortgage yet. But that's not the point. As I said earlier on, actually, at the moment, I will take a financial hit or whatever for this year in order to ensure that we have the lights can go on again at some point. I understand the sacrifices being made across the country, you know, across everywhere. It's not for me. I'm a very fortunate position that I've qualified for lots of government support, and I can, and I've got a wife who is a muggle. She has a real job, and that hasn't stopped throughout. I could be in a lot worse position. So if I earn half of what I earned last year, but I'm in a position to still be able to work next year, then I will take that.
A lot of pantomime singing children that will appreciate that, certainly. That's absolutely wonderful to hear about that. I'm really excited about that project.
Yeah, you should get involved.
Well, thank you so much for joining us and for telling us about all of these exciting things. It's very, very good to hear, and a real pleasure to chat to you as always.
Absolutely lovely to chat to you, Katie. Power to us. Come on, the arts. We can do this. We got it.
We have. Brilliant. Thank you. Goodbye.
Bye.
Thank you so much for listening today. To find out what we're up to, do join our mailing list or follow us on social media. And if you'd like to support the podcast by buying me a coffee, you can do that on buymeacoffee.com. Thank you so much. See you next time.